If you're hearing talk on the internet, you're listening to TalkZone.com.
Wow, thank you for that.
TalkZone.com.
Welcome to How to Tour Italy with your host, Anthony Capozzoli. Anthony's passion for Italy is contagious. His dream is to bring Italy to life for people everywhere and to help them embrace the wonderful Italian lifestyle at home. Now, with How to Tour Italy, let's welcome travel expert, guidebook author, photographer, and radio host, Anthony Capozzoli.
Welcome to the How to Tour Italy show. I'm your host, Anthony Capozzoli, and today we have a great show planned for you. We'll be talking about the great artist Caravaggio, his life, artwork, depravity, and where to see his work around the world. We also have a guest, Mr. Paul Bennett, the owner of Context Travel, one of the best walking tour providers you'll find. And in our food and wine segment, we'll be talking about a great dish from Rome, bucatini amatriciana. I'm real excited to have you on today. Thank you very much for listening. Well, let's get started with Mr. Michelangelo Merisi Caravaggio. I think I'd like to start this segment with a quote about him from one of his contemporaries. It reads, "The coming of Caravaggio was an omen of the ruin and demise of painting, comparable to how at the end of the world, the Antichrist, with false miracles and strange deeds, will lead to perdition great numbers of people." Vincenzo Carducco. He was an Italian painter in the Spanish royal court and one of Caravaggio's contemporaries. And from the quote, you can see that Mr. Caravaggio was not very well liked by the people that he painted with and lived with in his Rome. Caravaggio was from the 17th century Rome and painted in what was, I guess, termed the style mannerism. But the thing about Caravaggio is he did not do so. He came up with his own style of painting. And I think that led to most of his contemporaries disliking his work. In fact, Mr. Caravaggio himself was wanted for murder and died an untimely death, which we'll get into in a moment. What I'd like to start with a little bit of, about his early life. He was the oldest child of four, born in the town of Caravaggio just outside of Milan in 1571. His family was middle class, so they weren't rich or poor, but they lived a pretty sustainable life. And then Mr. Caravaggio was apprenticed at a pretty young age to a master by the name of Simone Petrazzano. Now, his master was relatively unknown. I think the biggest claim to fame for his master was the fact that his master studied under the great artist and giant of the Renaissance, Titian, and he produced one of the more famous pupils you can claim in Caravaggio. A cool fact about Caravaggio is he was born 10 years after the great Michelangelo Buonarroti and was Shakespeare's younger by only 7 years. He had a pretty powerful uncle, Uncle Lodovico. He was a priest in Rome, and if you know anything about ancient Rome and the Renaissance and just after that, the church held most of the power and the influence in society. They were pretty wealthy folks. Now, I can't speak intelligently about how wealthy Mr. Lodovico was, but for the fact that he was a priest in Rome probably held some pretty good sway. Caravaggio, at a young age, after he was released from his apprenticeship, he decided to move to Rome after his mother and father had passed. Their estate was divvied up amongst himself and his brothers. So he moved down to Rome with a pocket full of money, not too much, and started out very poor when he got there. He was able to earn a little bit of money painting unknown religious icons or smaller works for unknown patrons. And as you know, when you get started as an artist during the Renaissance and the Baroque era, you make most of your money being paid by rich patrons or the church. Those are your two big tickets to making good money. So he decided it wasn't enough. So he was taken in by a Mr. Monsignor Pandolfo Pucci, who decided to board him and pay him for his work. And Mr. Pucci himself wasn't particularly interested in art, but paid a little bit of money for a few iconographic images, religious images, things like that for Caravaggio to complete. Caravaggio speaks of Mr. Pucci in this way. He says he calls him Monsignor Insalata, and that means Mr. Salad. And that's because during the board of Caravaggio with Mr. Pucci, Pucci had to, of course, feed him and decided not to feed him much meat. He said he mostly fed him vegetables, beans, things like that. So he nicknamed him Monsignor Insalata. But the good thing about this was it was a break into richer circles for Mr. Caravaggio. So he soon was able to move into, I guess, a higher ranking, better paying, connected workshop with the Giuseppe Cesari, who was working with the Pope, Pope Clement VIII, to try to bring Rome back to life from what it was during the Renaissance. It had fallen into disarray. There were raids. The city had been sieged. And so it was relatively falling apart. It didn't hold the power that it did at one time. And during his work with Mr. Cesari, Caravaggio painted two images. One, Bacchus Malata, and the other one, Boy with a Basket of Fruit. Bacchus Malata is one of my favorite paintings from Caravaggio. It's his younger, one of his earlier works, I should say. And it's an image of the god Bacchus, the Greek god Bacchus. But the interesting thing is, it is a self-portrait of Michelangelo Merisi Caravaggio, and if you see the image, you can check it out on unabellavista.com/radioshow. I've got a list of the images I'll be talking about there today. You'll see that Caravaggio himself, he's a little bit green and a little bit sickly-looking, and mulatto in Italian does mean sick. And that's kind of a change in pace for the god Bacchus. Most of the time he's a vibrant god, usually shown either drinking or partying, hanging out with women, that kind of thing. But in this image, the self-portrait, he's a sickly god, and the leaves on his laurel crown are kind of fading and wilting. The grapes are held in his hand. You can see a couple are pulled off the vine. And he's tucking his shoulder in a little bit to kind of illustrate the fact that he's a little shy and he's concerned about how he might look. And many believe that that particular image was done by Caravaggio to show the effects of alcohol on his soul, because, as you know, Bacchus was the god of wine, and wine seemed to get Caravaggio in some trouble when he was a youngster. He lived a relatively unsavory life. He liked his booze, he liked his brothels, he liked to gamble. He was relatively hard to like as a person. He wasn't very well-liked in the powerful circles. Like I said, his contemporary artists didn't really like his work or how he was representing, I guess, biblical images. And we'll get into that a little bit later. One other thing about that I mentioned earlier about Caravaggio is he was wanted for murder. He killed a gentleman by the name of Renuccio Tomassoni simply over a gambling debt. I don't think he meant to kill him. It was a sword fight near what we would term in our day the tennis courts in ancient Rome. A sword fight broke out after they met each other up over who owed who the money. And Caravaggio meant to deliver rather an insulting blow versus a death blow and cut Mr. Tomassoni in the leg. Well, the cut went a little too deep, and he bled to death from his wound. So Caravaggio had to flee Rome, because even back in 17th century Rome, murder was not a good thing, just like it is today. So he had to flee, and a price was put on his head. And in Italian, the term is bando capitale, which is a price for your head, which means anyone that saw him could kill him, cut off his head, and deliver it as proof of his death for a reward. So Caravaggio fled Rome. He went down to Naples, spent some time in Malta, and while he was in Malta, he was actually knighted. Now, keep in mind, he was able to get into powerful circles because of his artistic ability. People wanted him to paint beautiful paintings for their churches, for their homes, and commissioned him to do lots of work. However, after he drank and hung out a little bit, his personality started to come through, and eventually, even after being knighted in Malta, he had to flee the order and escape Malta once again. I don't know, he didn't kill anybody, but he didn't do right by the knights, and the knights wanted to throw him out and throw him in prison. So he actually had to flee. He went back up to Naples and spent some time there. Now, as all this was going on after he fled Rome, the powers that be in Rome, specifically Scipione Borghese and some others that were higher up in the religious orders, and some, you know, powerful patrons that had money and knew him as an artist and his ability to create such wonderful oil paintings, were attempting to work out a financial settlement with the family of the Tomassoni family. So what happened after he had fled Malta, he ended up in Naples, he got word that there was a settlement actually on the table that would cost him a little bit of money. I didn't think it included any jail time. So he decided then to make his way back up to Rome to take back his place in society there, begin painting once again. Well, on his way back to Rome, he died an untimely death, and it's unclear whether he was actually killed or murdered by the Tomassoni family or others en route, pirates, whoever that might be, or he died of malaria. I think you have to maybe do a little research on your own and decide which theory you think is plausible. I happen to believe that he was actually killed. The Tomassoni family they had money, they were powerful, and they wouldn't let a slight like that go just for the financial settlement, especially over killing a son. So no one knows for sure, but that's my guess. So at 39 years old in 1610, he died. Something else I think is interesting about Caravaggio. I mentioned before that he was born 10 years after the death of Michelangelo. He was Shakespeare's younger by 7 years. In Rome, in Campo di Fiori, there's a wonderful statue of a gentleman by the name of Giordano Bruno. It's actually one of my favorite statues in Rome. Well, on February 17th in 1600, Giordano Bruno was burned at the stake on the very spot in Campo di Fiori where the statue is today. So Caravaggio was in Rome during the time that Mr. Bruno was burned at the stake, and we're going to cover Mr. Bruno and his life and dedication to the sciences and the reason he ended up at the stake in Campo di Fiori. We're not going to go into detail about that today, but I would like to give you a bit of a travel tip from a photography perspective. If you're in Rome enjoying the statue in Campo di Fiori of Bruno, there's a restaurant there called Carbonara. The food's pretty good. I'd say enjoy a nice meal there, but go around sunset. If you walk into the restaurant and go up the stairs, there's a window that overlooks Campo di Fiori. At that time, during the sunset, you get a wonderful picture opportunity to take a shot of Giordano Bruno with the sun setting behind him in the Campo. It's one of my favorites, and I've taken that same photo every single time I go to Rome, except the last time, because when I went, it was raining that day when I was in Rome in Campo di Fiori, so I didn't get a chance to do it. So if you do get a chance, be sure to visit Carbonara Restaurant and take a shot of Giordano Bruno. It's wonderful. So what I want to do now is talk a little bit about some of the patrons and some of the rich people that supported Caravaggio and get in specifically to some of his artwork. One of his, most powerful and richest patrons was Scipione Borghese. He was the nephew to Pope Paul V, and the Borghese Gallery is his namesake where Scipione Borghese lived, and it is absolutely loaded with works from Caravaggio. Some of his most popular or more famous works are there, I think mainly because it's very easy to see a multitude of his works there. And by the way, there are a couple ways to enjoy Caravaggio's works. And one, you can buy the Una Bella Vista guidebook, and I give you some information about the images, what's being represented, the backstory about who is actually in the image. Or you can take a walking tour with, my guest will be on, Mr. Paul Bennett of Context Travel. They do a wonderful job of guided tours, not only through the Borghese, but throughout Rome to see all of Caravaggio's works, and we'll talk about that a little bit more with Mr. Paul Bennett in the next segment. Another one of his patrons was, and I always say the first name wrong, is Ciriaco Mattei. So I hope I said that okay. For anyone out there that wants to correct me, please send me an email and let me know how exactly say that at ajc@doyouloveitaly.com or ajc@unabellavista.com. Mr. Mattei commissioned Caravaggio to do a couple of works, and I think the best way to kind of get your arms around the work that he did for the Mattei family is to read a book by Mr. Jonathan Haar. It's about the lost painting. The work originally was about the young St. John the Baptist, the book, and it took a turn, and they talked about the discovery of another Caravaggio painting called The Taking of Christ. And that is also posted on the website, unabellavista.com/radio show, so you can take a look at that image and see it for all its glory. It's one of my favorites, actually. Another one of his rich patrons was actually Pope Clement VIII. And the reason he was hired by Pope Clement VIII was for the Jubilee of 1600 in Rome. And these were probably Caravaggio's first and most important commissions. They're located at the church named San Luigi dei Francesi. It's located between the Pantheon and Piazza Navona in Rome. And the paintings that are there are The Calling of St. Matthew, St. Matthew and the Angel, and The Martyrdom of St. Matthew. When you walk into the church, you're going to go all the way down to the last chapel on the left. There's a coin box there. If you drop a coin in, it lights up the chapel so that you can get a better view of the artwork. And I highly recommend doing this because the chapel is dimly lit otherwise. And the reason that's important is because you really get to embrace and get your arms around the beauty of painting that is Caravaggio. And the reason I say that is his particular use of light. He uses light and shadow masterfully. In fact, his entire art form and his painting style has been named Tenebrism, after the word tenebroso in Italian, which means shadow. So that is the art style of Caravaggio. But a couple things I want to point out. When you go into the church, it is an active church, so be very cautious and polite. If there is a mass or a service going on, wait until it's over, and then go in. And, you know, they'll list the times when the chapel is available for viewing on the door. So when you go in, if there is a mass, just either politely sit in, which is something I think, even if you're not religious when you visit Italy, to experience a ceremony in Italy, specifically a Baroque church, it's absolutely amazing. It really lets you embrace, understand, and appreciate what art and history was like in ancient Rome. So, not ancient Rome, excuse me, but in Baroque Rome. The other thing I want to point out, and specifically the calling of St. Matthew, Michelangelo Caravaggio quotes the other Michelangelo, Michelangelo Buonarroti, from the creation of Adam. The hand of Jesus that you'll see on the far right of the image, just under God's light coming in from the window above his head, above Jesus' head, is a quote, and the hand of Jesus takes the form of Adam in the creation of Adam in the Sistine Chapel ceiling. It's you might overlook it, but it is definitely something to take a look at when you get there and enjoy, because it really speaks volumes of not only Caravaggio's ability to recreate something after a master, but it lets you understand that he was also a student of art and did not just do his own thing. I mean, he had his own style, but he appreciated and respected some of the work of others. So what I want to talk a little bit more about today is about who he used in his paintings. He didn't go about his day-to-day painting routine like other painters did. He used contemporary Romans and normal, everyday, contemporary 17th century dress. Now, this is a huge leap outside of the box for other artists and painters. He literally used prostitutes. He painted images of people as he saw them, which meant if they were soiled and or muddy, sad, wrinkled, depressed, he painted biblical images of the people that he used as he saw them. He didn't try to make them more beautiful. He didn't try to paint them in what he would think or what others would think would be a true biblical scene. So a couple images really bring this to life. One, in his crucifixion of St. Peter. St. Peter is being crucified and God's light is raining down on him, and it's a beautiful image. It was highly criticized as rather an image of Caravaggio painting the crucifixion of St. Peter. It was rather how to crucify someone. So what that meant was, you can actually see the people hoisting St. Peter up on the cross to settle the cross upside down as he died, opposite of Jesus, in Rome. You can see the mud under the feet of those crucifying him, the blood on the spikes through St. Peter's feet. So it is truly something, I think, that best illustrates Caravaggio's painting style, that and Death of the Virgin. Death of the Virgin is usually painted in not only a very highly religious and beautiful imagery. Caravaggio's Death of the Virgin is quite opposite that. In fact, she looks just like a normal woman who has died, and with other people kind of praying and emotional around her. So that's quite a leap also from the traditional style of painting the Virgin. So those are two paintings I think that best illustrate that. Again, his use of light. It was divine. It truly, the thing about Caravaggio is he painted his passions, his soul, his fear, and exactly what he saw in his his art, the people sitting in to be painted into his artwork. So I think the final painting I want to talk about before I get into where to see his work is a painting called The Entombment. It is now located at the Vatican Museums in the Pinacoteca, but you could see it in situ, which means where it originally stood or where it originally stands. It's a replica, so it's not actually in situ, but it does a very good job of depicting how Caravaggio thought and how he painted. His use of light in the image, with Jesus being entombed in this case, is wonderful. And it's set behind the altar, so when the priest goes up to prepare the body and blood of Christ, the Eucharist, when he raises his hands with either the body and the blood of Christ above his head, you can see that there is indeed symbolic use of the body and blood of Christ, because it actually touches the plane that Jesus is being entombed into. So if that's not very clear, please go to unabellavista.com/radioshow and you can see an image for yourself. We're going to have to take a short break. And after this, we'll have Mr. Paul Bennett of Context Travel, and we'll be talking about where to see the best of Caravaggio and the wonders that Context Travel can bring.
If you love travel, imagine visiting one of the world's greatest cities and exploring it as very few ever have. Only Context Travel makes it possible. Context Travel offers in-depth walking seminars for intellectually curious travelers like you. It's your chance to experience a city as a cultural experience, unlike any traditional tour. Context Travel is a network of architects, historians, and art historians. They feature small groups of six or less, led by PhD-level scholars, with walks lasting from 3 hours to a full day. You can book a Context tour in seven great cities: New York, Paris, London, Rome, Florence, Venice, Naples, or Istanbul. Context Travel offers concierge services, art and archaeology walks, cuisine walks, shopping walks, and more. Visit us online at contexttravel.com. That's contexttravel.com. That's contexttravel.com.